So we've encountered some technical difficulties here in Scryer's room.
We had a podcasting emergency.
So yeah, one of the cables just decided to die from my mic, which is devastating because I don't get picked up very well.
Yeah, he needs a specific mic. I have a voice like God, and no one can ignore me.
Yeah, this this episode will definitely be a test in my post-production skills to see how far I've come in a year, because I'm definitely going to have to use some compression.
Just a little bit.
So the plan was...
Back to Mikeless Mario.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and we have Justin here
today. Yes, we have Justin. We have Juice-tan himself.
Yes, joining for the first time and not the last.
Yeah, we've actually known him for many, many years. We didn't just... We're not just picking him up.
A core member of our D&D group.
Yes, he's there for all of the ones that we do. I mean, he was in the campaign that I ran previously. He's in the campaign I'm running right now. He's in Tony's campaigns.
Yep, pretty much, yeah, every campaign we've done.
Yeah.
So the plan was I was going to follow up Vecna with Darth Vitiate from the Star Wars Expanded Universe slash Knights of the Old Republic series. But unfortunately, technical difficulties... So, I'll be doing that next time. You hadn't heard, there's been some KOTOR news, you should look it up.
Yeah,
so,
FOTOR, right?
Trying to keep, yeah. I haven't really looked up
much. I don't know shit about it besides that word.
Hype is real.
In an attempt to, you know, correct our technical difficulties, we tried to make a pilgrimage to Walmart, which we all fear. Yeah. And, sadly, we didn't find what we want, the cable we needed, but... Yeah. I did get to tell them the little story about the last time one of the last times I went to that Walmart.
Which... I'm sure all of you have your own little Walmart stories. There's the whole People of Walmart subreddit, like...
I mean, it's a random encounter generator.
Kevin didn't even want to get out of the car to encounter them.
He did it!
He didn't get out of the car.
I'm the driver. I'm going to go park over there and play on my phone while you guys run in.
So, I joke about... my hometown and its adjacent towns and how they're terrible because they are. But I love them because it's my hometown. But that said, this is something you can maybe expect. It happened to me to happen to you when you go to these Walmarts sometimes. So I was just walking in.
Yeah.
And there's this young guy just sitting on like the side of the entrance.
Yeah.
And he very politely asked me, excuse me, sir, do you have any spare change or like a dollar or anything you could give me? And I was like, oh, yeah, man, sure, here. I gave him like a five or something. Mm. And then immediately, someone runs up to me, and it's like some
Middle Eastern,
I assume, lady. She's, like had a head wrap or whatever. And then she's like, please, sir, my children, please help. And I was like, ha! Like, I don't like that shit. So like,
you got PvP flagged, and she went rant.
Yup. PvP was enabled. You had your first player encounter.
Bro asked me nicely. She attacked me. And
she ran up on
me. So I was just like, here. And then I gave her some amount of money. I don't remember. And she's like, oh, thank you, blah, 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 and then ran away to do that to someone else, I guess. And then I go inside, and I'm like, wow, that was really uncomfortable. And then immediately, some guy, or the dude, runs up to me. There's this fat, white dude, bald, and he's just like, hey, man, like, you shouldn't be giving them money. Like, they can go get a job. They don't actually need it. And I was just like, dude, it's not a big deal. I don't mind. You can feel however you want to feel about it. I'm going to go away now.
Yeah.
For every force, there's an equal and opposite force. You did too much charity in one burst, so some guy had to come up and say something.
Yeah. And importantly, he goes back to his table at the Subway inside the Walmart.
You know, the restaurant everybody wants to go to.
Yes, the hangout.
His usual haunt.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I do my shopping, which, I don't know, maybe 20, 50, 30 minutes. And I leave, and he's still fucking there. Presumably yelling at people for charity. Yeah. And I was just like, I hate this fucking Walmart so much.
They're all on it. See, the real trick is that they're all in on the grift together. You see, the first guy is, he's polite to everybody, and he gets everybody, it's like sort of like to show that they have money. And the woman comes, she asks, and if you say no to her, that's fine, because once you go inside, that guy will be like, you can't give them money, they need your blah, 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 blah. Right. And that'll piss you off, and you'll be like, you know what, maybe I am going to give her some money. And then they split it all three ways, even cut. You don't realize
no,
it.
No, that guy is clearly too racist and stupid to be colluding with the people outside. He's just the other opposite tree of the quest.
If it was a grift, they got me perfectly, okay? I gave them money, and I wanted to get away from that guy.
If it was
a trick, they got my ass completely.
You just got hit real fast with, like, 3 points of Paragon, and then you got, like, offered the Renegade sub bonus. And...
Well, Walmart is not... for this level of sophisticated scammer, okay? That's the argument I'm making here.
That's fair.
I think it's evidenced by the fact that we all have such a low opinion of Walmart to begin with. None of us even wanted to go there.
Yeah, I think
the last resort.
Yeah.
We wanted to go to Target, but we knew that it didn't have, that they probably didn't
have. That day I got like the holy grail of like random encounters you hate all at once. It's like when you're like in Pokemon, you're trying to just go through the fucking cave and you get hit every single time. And
Zubat, you can't run away.
Yeah,
Supersonic, you're confused now.
I broke a Game Boy over that shit one day. It was one of the most shameful days of my life
when you rage quit over the caves.
Yeah,
it happened.
You know what? I bet it was Dark Cave on one of the Gen 2 games.
Yep.
Because you have to go through
Soul Sober
almost blind.
Yep. And I was like, this is not for children.
Yeah.
This is not for children. This is just mean Japan. You're a mean people.
Yeah.
Pokemon didn't have like a difficulty, did it?
No.
No.
No, it was easy enough. The newer ones are brain dead though. The newer ones are straight
brain
dead.
They're now for the lowest common denominator.
Yeah,
so
100%. I mean, Kevin's more of authority on this, but my take on it is that like the old ones were more air quotes, like they scale because of the levels,
right? Yeah. Okay, yeah, like you should have better Pokemon and they should be higher level by that point.
Yes,
like
so the in game, like storyline Pokemon has never been anything difficult. It like the most difficult, like parts come from like in the Johto games, after like you get the 8th badge and you go to like through Victory Road, the highest level thing on Victory Road is like level 28, and then the first member of the Elite Four has like a level 45. Which means that by the end, it's like a level 50, like, plus fight. And you have only been able to fight, the highest level thing that you're able to fight is a level 28 Graveler.
Yeah, oof.
So you have, like, a lot of grinding that you need to do. But difficulty isn't really, like, the theme of Pokemon, like, storylines.
Well, I mean, if you're going to sell Pikachu to, you know, 8-year-olds, it can't be that hard.
No.
Yeah, 100%. But the thing I wanted to talk about today is... One pastime we had for many, many moons was going over to Justin's on Sunday and putting on Kung Fu movies.
Oh, it rules.
Yeah.
And we have digested many of the Shaw Brothers collection. And yeah, as Kevin said, they rule.
Yeah, well, it's not just that one, right? Like, we would pick between, like, I Don't Want No Trouble Kung Fu and then, like, you know, like, Wacky Kung Fu, right? And I think also part of that was that, like, we all grew up... I don't know about you, but, like, I grew up actually watching Mystery Science Theater, like, on the TV. Like, when it was, like, on the air.
It was on our TV, but I never actually sat down and watched it. But I would sit and watch parts of it, and I appreciated the show.
And that just that concept in general, like, as we got older, especially, and we were, you know, sitting around, like, poking at movies, we just started to do that. And then Kung Fu movies... are perfect for yelling.
They're so good. They're so good. It's almost. It feels like it's the point. It really with the shitty dubs especially.
So I never really like watched Mystery Science Theater or anything, but just kind of independently. Like my dad has always really liked kung fu movies.
Oh, okay.
Apparently in Sicily it was like a thing when they were younger. Like you just go down to
like how Italians were really into like westerns at one point.
Yeah. No, yeah, seriously. Like, he'd be like, you go down to the cinema with a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, right, that's what Italian does.
You pay whatever for your ticket, and you stay until you're out of cigarettes, and you've watched, like, 4 or 5 movies.
Yeah, because, back in the day, like, movies were like that's that.
Awesome. I know, like, technically.
You didn't go for just that movie. They didn't, like, kick you out. It was
you bought entry.
Yeah.
I know, technically, that's a bad lifestyle. Unfortunately.
That's an amazing lifestyle.
That's a hell yeah simulator, if I've ever heard one.
Hell yeah, brother.
It's like,
chain smoking and watching kung fu movies.
That sounds amazing.
This is like, that's an evening right there.
This is like late 60s, mid-70s probably.
Was this in Sicily or like where?
Sicily.
Yeah. Oh yeah, hell yeah.
In the old country.
My dad's from a small town right outside of.
And then you go have Palermo, a chocolate bar and a glass of red wine.
dad's never much of a wine drinker, but yes, you can at like basically anywhere from like 1 to 2 a.m. go to the piazza and get like ice cream or some shit if you want. Yeah.
True. Oh my god. Just more cultured over there.
No, people are just like awake at that time. Like children too and shit. And it's like they're getting ice cream and it's just like...
It's because they're not going to school or work the next day.
Yeah. Like, it's just like... It's like we're chill. Whatever.
It's like the
I don't know enough about like Italy, the country, or the actual like culture of the people there to like have any be like, well, maybe it's because of this. All I can think of is like that just sounds so cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's undeniably cool. Yeah. It just is. Like,
well, yeah. Well, Sicily too, because piazza basically just means plaza. Yeah. So it's just like a little strip of stuff.
Yeah, a little
everything's walking distance. You just walk there.
Yeah.
And it's because my dad's hometown, Carini, is super old and everywhere's super old as shit in Sicily.
Yeah.
It's like cobblestones and stuff.
Yeah, it was built to withstand in case the Mongols came.
There's also a literal castle just right there.
Yeah.
I love that shit.
In the town.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's...
Which
that's
is like, it's like a historical landmark.
Yeah.
But it's a hangout spot for teenagers.
That's good.
You sit on the steps and you smoke.
That's what
they used to do. That maybe they vape now. I don't know. Whatever. But
no. The Europeans, they never stopped smoking. There was no,
and they never will.
There was no like, oh, we should vape now. No.
But anyway, sorry, I got off on a tangent. But all that was to say that because my dad grew up watching kung fu movies because he just liked them. I ended up watching kung fu movies like my whole life basically.
True.
Because he would just come home and be like, I rented a movie. I'm just like, sick. Kung Fu, and it's just like, this is all just badass.
Like, yeah. What was, like, do you remember, like, what the first one that that you, like, recognized?
He just goes on vibes, you know? Like, so he would just pick whatever, but Iron Monkey was probably one that I can, like, pretty clearly remember. Some of the ones I can't remember the name of, like, because they're just, like, so obscure. There's that, I think it's a Jet Li one. I was talking about this. There's a Japanese movie that Wu-Tang Clan references in one of their songs, and it's like the intro to like a Japanese movie where it's the guy's like his family's just been like murdered except his young son, and he's like, I'll give you the choice. Like if you choose your favorite toy, I'll send you to like be with your mother. But if you choose like the blade, I'll teach you how to fight, and then like we'll avenge her. And then the child like you know wavers between the toy and then picks the sword. And then there's a Jet Li movie that completely just rips off that entire scene. They do the exact same thing.
That's awesome.
And then
it's pretty metal.
It works.
Yeah.
It's
a pretty enticing opening.
Yeah. I don't know the plot of that other movie, but then that movie is about Jet Li and his young assassin son going to find the guy who killed their clan or whatever. And he has now been turned into like a metal immortal man by a witch.
Oh shit!
And he like can like anamorph into like a tank thing.
What the fuck?
He like folds over and he becomes like a metal triangle.
Okay, and I would not expect that.
Bulldozes through walls and then he like bursts out of it with like two swords.
Shit. You're talking about X-Men right now. That's not a kung fu.
Yeah, that's
wild.
Bananas.
Dude. That's
wild. Okay, I'm pretty sure it's Jet. It might not be Jet Li, but I'm almost positive it's Jet Li.
Yeah, I don't remember. Jet Li has got like was it a classical like
an
setting?
old movie?
No, it was. I want to say either late 80s or 90s is how it looked. I could be wrong, but
were they like in like a mod like was the story set?
No, it was
in the antiquity.
Yeah.
Okay, because like you know, there's like Rumble in the Bronx with Jackie Chan, where it's like. What even is this movie? You know, like they're dirt biking over cars and down a street in the middle of the Bronx.
Jackie Chan is his own genre of kung
yes,
fu.
Yes, he is. Yes,
like, abso-fucking-lutely.
He pioneered comedy kung fu.
Yes,
before, it was sort of a thing. You could probably find it here and there, but he basically turned it into like it is. He established like this is how you do kung fu and comedy. The rest of you suck at it.
But now he's just a singer.
But I can't think of the Jet Li ones like that. There's like the one Unleashed Hero.
Is this pre-America Jet Li?
There's a couple of really bad old Jet Li movies that are like almost unwatchable. Like they're not bad funny or bad good. They're just bad.
Just one that's like a musical?
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. I think I watched part of that.
Just, a musical?
Yeah, Jet Li was like singing in Chinese just randomly all of a sudden. I'm pretty sure he's with like a flock of children too or something.
I feel like they gave him the Jackie really Chan treatment at one point and they were just like, yeah, sure, Jet Li, do whatever you want. And like, but they
just shotgun blasting genres.
Yeah, they just ended up in some weird places.
I had no idea there was a musical. That's fun.
There's also a couple.
Was it both a kung fu movie and a musical? Because I'm constructing something I really
like. They were like Shaolin trainees or something, but then like they were like in a field and doing something, and all of a sudden it's like Jet Li just swings to the camera like he's Jim Carrey or something and just bursts into song. And it's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
It's awesome.
Yeah,
that's waggy. It's very funny though.
But I mean, like his classics are classics. Like Unleashed is a classic one. I love that one.
The one is dated, but
yeah, it's very dated.
Fun movie.
Yeah, I won't disagree with that. Yeah. Have you watched Unleashed or any of the Jet Li ones in a while? Other than like Fearless. Fearless. That's the other one.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think I remember Fearless. Fearless, is that the one...
where it's like a tournament?
Yeah, yeah.
I saw the one relatively recently. Is it Jason Statham that's in that as the other as the time?
War. Cop? That's War.
That's War. So
that,
War,
oh, that's another one. I forgot about that one.
War has Jason Statham as like a time cop.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Excuse me?
No. Maybe I'm thinking of a different one.
No, that's the one.
That's the one. Well, okay. The point is...
Okay.
He's not Jason, a time cop. He's a dimension cop.
The one. Okay, yeah. I was going to say.
Time Cop would be stupid.
But Jet Li versus...
You're being ridiculous.
Not Van Damme. You hear my confusion, my little confusion. What am I missing? That sounds awesome.
There's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie called Time Cop as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. Yeah. If there was a Kung Fu Time Cop movie with Jet Li and Jason Statham, what am I missing?
Well, let me tell you, because I know Jason Statham as like, he's a Kung Fu man in his own right half the time. He's an action movie star here in America.
Yeah.
And in that movie, he is fully like relegated to just the supporting cop in Die Hard, where he's just like, oh,
I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, but he's like, he's young Jason Statham. He's just not super. He's not as good enough at like kung fu to be a main character.
Is this the one where he's looking for like Jet Li's the assassin guy?
I don't remember.
It should be.
All I remember is that Jason Statham in this whole movie was like, and I also can't do kung fu, so I'm going to pull my gun and get my ass beat.
I think you're talking, I don't remember the name of the movie, but it's like basically like a shitty version of Face Off, where the assassin, he and his partner were like trying to stop or whatever. It's in like the beginning of the movie, and it's like, looks like they got him, but then like, oh, I killed my partner. And then like, cue time skip, and then the rest of the movie happens.
Yeah,
where he's hunting this guy, and then who's Jet Li apparently, and then turns out no, actually this whole time they actually killed that guy at first, and then his partner assumed his identity and got plastic surgery to be Jet Li.
Oh yeah. What is this one?
His trademark, this assassin, was that his bullets were made from depleted uranium.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, the end, it leaves it on, like, a, well, who walked out of the surgery kind of, like, question of, like, well, did he die? Did they get him? Kind of thing. Like, or did he get a new face and he's gone? Like,
so I don't think I'm talking about that movie at all, because that sounds sick, but I don't remember that
at all.
The one
that you're talking... So War is the one that has the big fight scene on the roof of, like, a really tall skyscraper in, like, a courtyard, if you remember that one. That's the end of War, because that movie was billed as Statham versus Jet Li, like, showdown movie.
Okay.
And it was pretty straightforwardly, like, they're on opposite sides, and it's leading up to this big fight.
Okay. I'm not talking about War, definitely. This is definitely, I think, the one. Because
It sounds like the one. It sounded like the one.
The one, the whole time, I'm like, when is Jason Statham gonna Statham them? Like, he's gonna get them. But and then the whole movie, he's like,
but he was still
no.
trying to be a real actor.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's before he was Kung Fu Jason.
It was before he was the working man.
Yeah.
You know?
that movie, he's just a regular cop, but he has his, like, special dimension.
Yeah. His sci-fi gun.
Which is great, because it's actually one of my favorite scenes in that movie is the good Jet Li, because, you know, the shenanigans they have, like,
right,
they've been absorbing the essence of all the other killed Jet Lis.
Yeah,
and so
yeah,
he's super strong now, and he just takes the gun from him and twists it. And then just throws in the trash.
Yeah, God bless.
I didn't know you could do that.
Not even like take it apart the cool way, like right, slide it back so it's all disassembled. Just
quick twist. Yeah, finger the wrist.
I love that movie because it gets silly, but yeah, it's still like really fun. Like the evil Jet Li smashes a dude with two cars or two motorcycles, right?
Yeah,
I think it's two cop motorcycles, and he just. And
it's pretty good move.
That's a very good move. I'm not quite sure how regular Jet Li stands a chance, if I'm being honest.
Well, that he had to. That's why he had to absorb
that's why he
the
had
other.
To absorb more, yeah.
Yeah. The motorcycle one. I don't think we've watched this yet. I've watched it. Maybe you have. The in the Heroic Trio, it's like a heroin movie. So it's like
we were talking about this.
It's three girls are the main three women are the main characters, and at one scene, character drives a motorcycle like into this like weird warehouse setting. That it's just like nondescript steam warehouse, you know?
And yeah, I love that shit, dude.
In the old crime hideouts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just generating steam, like how many kung fu fighters generate dust.
Right. and she jumps in and she like flicks the motorcycle so that she's like now completely like 180 sideways. Right?
Oh man.
Like,
okay.
And just spins like this, like
any donuts or
like just spins like clockwise like a frisbee or like something you would just throw.
Oh yeah, so it's
like a boomerang or something. And like and she like mows down like an entire like room full of guys because it's a fucking motorcycle.
That's so sick.
That's pretty
cool. And then on like the last rotation, she like kicks off of it. Right?
Yeah, naturally.
And then like superhero lands and like
sick nasty.
That one's pretty fun too, actually. The Rogue Trio. It's very very silly, but it was a good heroin one. Had a good hot girls.
Oh, another thing I want to talk about. Specifically about kung fu movies is the Shaw Brothers movie Factory.
Yes.
So back in the day, I
watched a few documentaries about this, and they literally, like, there were two kind of competing philosophies in this space of Hong Kong cinema, and one was like Jackie Chan, right, where they were like, we're going to kind of develop a star and put like big movie productions around this star.
Right.
But the Shaw Brothers took the opposite, and Jackie Chan actually did like, I think, a test movie with the Shaw Brothers, and then they were like, this isn't really working like the way that we thought. And then he ended up getting, I don't remember what his first one was, but he ended up on the other side because everybody was like, or no, actually it wasn't even Jackie Chan. I think it was Bruce Lee. It was earlier than Jackie Chan, yeah, because it was Bruce Lee, and then he ended up making Big Boss, and Big Boss was a test movie where he wasn't even supposed to be the main character, but he was so good that they were like, you're the main character now, you're going to win the last fight. He was supposed to lose it.
No one can pay attention to any other characters whenever you're on screen, buddy.
He's so charismatic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were like, there's no match for, like, you are clearly the one shining here, so... You're not, because if, like, Big Boss, if you watch it, they're pretty even the whole way, and then at the end, it's like, okay, you know, showdown, who's the big boss, and he was supposed to lose, so, but it didn't work out with the Shaw Brothers, because the Shaw Brothers have had, like, a quantity over quality mentality, whereas the other side, were like, Bruce Lee's a star, we can develop him, we can make big productions around him. So they had a literal factory in Hong Kong that they just moved sets around, and they filmed so many things, and that's why all the same guys are in all the movies. Because they were like on retainer, essentially, just hanging out in this factory making movies day after day after day.
Actual movie factory. It's so great, too, because sometimes they use the same person for a different character in the same movie.
Yeah, it'll just be like, I have to go now, and then the guy will leave, and then it'll be like a villain character coming in with the most obvious like fake sideburns, and like he's not in a white shirt anymore, he's in a red one with a black coat, and he's like, so you finally come!
With some super shitty patchy facial hair that they like glued on in between there. Or they love, the other thing they love to do is give them pointy hair.
Ooh, they love it.
The widow's peak. Yeah. The most vicious widow peaks.
Yeah, they give them they give them the quick Vegeta, and then that makes them unrecognizable.
Yeah, yeah, clearly.
Or the, putting, you know, like a 30-year-old guy in, like, the white hair and white Fu Manchu.
To make him the old guy, They love doing that.
Speaking of, one of my favorites. Yes. Yeah, Tony was just ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
One of the movies I showed these guys, because that was one of the things when I first met everyone here, you know, this friend group, and we got absorbed two different friend groups basically merged.
Yeah.
But one of the first things I connected to Justin over was kung fu movies, and we basically just had like, you like kung fu movies? I like kung fu movies. Which kung fu movies have you seen? And and so I was just like, oh shit, have you guys seen Executioners from Shaolin? It's one of my favorites. And no, we had seen it. And I was like, holy shit, you're gonna love this.
You're
like,
in for a treat.
It's mainly legendary.
And we were.
It's legendary.
Because of one man. Who's the villain? That's Pai Mei, who you might recognize from a different set of movies called Kill Bill.
Yeah. And this isn't just like, oh, they're using that same kind of guy.
No, like he's the trope.
His name is Pai Mei.
He casted the character.
He's the same guy.
Quentin Tarantino would absolutely have the freak knowledge to know who he is.
Absolutely. Yep. And he would have the balls to be like, I'm taking that guy. He is now in my universe as him.
So but I will give him a different special move.
Tony, yes. So appropriate that you say it takes balls.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing.
No pun was intended.
Pai Mei is really good at controlling his balls.
Yeah.
In fact, that's his most deadly move.
You see,
Pai Mei has the ability to move his weak point, which is, I guess that's like a chi thing. I don't know. But at a certain, you have to, you can only kill, defeat him at a certain time of day, but no one's quite sure when it is. So he moves his weak point, but a mistake everyone keeps making when they kung fu fight is they try to kick him in the balls.
Yes. Like every
time. Everyone does it.
Time.
Which, it is the critical hit zone.
Which in virtually any other kung fu movie would be like
the move.
That's like so dishonorable.
Yeah.
Like,
well, dishonorable, but also the like, move.
Well, yeah,
it would just work. Yeah,
it gets you. But every time, if you try to kick Pai Mei in the balls,
and he'll goad you into it.
Yeah. Which he'll expose.
Well, that's true. He does. He was.
Oh no! I seem to have bowed out my legs.
He was a master baiter.
Listen. The mantis feigns weakness, lulling their opponent to a false sense of superiority.
Yes, exactly.
So when you kick Pai Mei in the balls, he does like a clench, and he visibly like moves and looks like he's like power flexing, and then your foot then it gets sucked into his crotch.
Yep.
Yeah. And you're trapped every time.
And when we say
no one sees it,
when we say no one sucked, sees it coming. It literally like the foot disappears.
It goes up.
So silly. Yeah.
And then he screams and starts dragging you back for some amount of distance before he then snaps your knee and you're done. He's got your ass.
It's such a good move.
It's like literally like how you can, if you are disciplined enough or Chinese enough, that you can just just retract your balls up into your stomach.
Apparently, man.
But this guy can do it on a combative level.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Wow.
I worry not for the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks. I worry for the man who has practiced one 10,000 times.
Yeah.
And it's just him just like
sucking his balls into his trash.
It's next level Iron Horse technique.
And another bonus really little funny reference, anyone who loves Mortal Kombat, you might recognize Shinjuku, I think his name is, resembles Pai Mei quite a bit. He's like a just old, you know, kung fu man.
Yeah, I never put two and two together, but that checks out.
A very specific kick move where it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's he like you like turn around and you like hit really quick, you know,
with
just your calf, you know.
Huh. Yeah,
And it's like a quick series of a bunch of kicks. One of Pai Mei's moves.
A weird little jab. Okay.
He does it right in the intro before the devastating.
Yeah, he does. It is very silly. Yeah, I didn't put two and two together in Mortal Kombat. That's fun.
Yeah. Well,
but underestimate him. Yeah.
And evidently, in the interim, like, this movie takes place in, like, you know, ancient Chinese times.
Yeah.
And Kill Bill takes place in the 1980s or 90s, I think. And in the interim, between that time, he did learn another move, and that would be the exploding heart technique.
Yes.
But frankly,
But think about it, though. He survived the Boxer Rebellion.
Yeah.
The Great War,
yeah.
World War II,
communism. Gone on for a while.
he's trying to survive the Boxer Rebellion and just like trying to get guys like just still using the kick yeah. me in the balls move.
Everybody to take it literally, they're boxing. And he's like, oh no, this doesn't how does this work? I have to make them punch my balls.
The last thing I know that's a reference to Pai Mei, obviously, is there's a Netflix series. I'm actually sad they didn't make more, but I liked it. Seis Manos.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like three like Mexican kids who've been taken in by this...
that makes sense, six
hands. This kindly Chinese master guy who's taught them, you know, kung fu and martial arts.
And look into why I'm down here.
Yeah, and then his like brother basically. Or something shows up, and it's like a decrepit-looking Pai Mei.
Yeah.
Oh. He's like... I don't think his name is Pai Mei in that.
No.
But it's obviously Pai Mei. But he shows up and he's just like, I'm his brother or whatever. It's just like, we're family, basically. I'm not evil. And then...
I'm like your uncle.
The whole
your
reason
cool uncle.
And I'm totally not here to access the thing you don't want the evil people to access yeah. that's here.
And the whole reason this dude, the other guy, fled to Mexico was because he stole one of the peaches of immortality.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is this the Netflix cartoon? Yeah, okay.
I'm
yeah.
pretty sure I... Got,
yeah, yes. I watched it. Yeah, it was sick.
I don't know if Kevin
I don't know. Did they get a second season?
No.
Yeah,
it was popular enough.
It was sick. I thought it was sick.
But yeah, well,
they had a streak of good animation series like that.
After
for a while.
He eats the peach in that, he turns into straight up just Pai Mei. Like basically,
I never
like,
put. Yeah, that is just Pai Mei.
He does
isn't
the weird it? Thing. Mm. He's just like super cocky and like.
Pai Mei is also kind of. Is he not like sort of basically Fu Manchu?
I have no idea.
Fu Manchu is very is well.
Is that
I mean,
like a mythological figure? I only know it for the name of the facial hair.
Maybe he's mythological, but like there was a series of movies going back to like the 30s, 40s, 50s. I think like some of them are in black and white and stuff, and they were called Fu Manchu, and the character that was like a power hungry sort of evil Chinese guy named Fu Manchu with a big long Fu Manchu, and he was always after like a sword of power or like.
And he's just getting foiled every week at the cinema?
Essentially, yeah.
Oh, wow,
all the
okay.
time.
Did they just make this guy Ming?
Maybe.
Ming the Merciless?
Yeah.
That adds up.
Basically,
I would totally watch those movies and come to the back.
I would actually like assert that's definitely what has happened.
Probably. I don't know exactly. Wait, what is that you're referencing?
Flash Gordon is like the most racist character
yeah.
of a
yeah.
Chinese
oh,
man.
And they, yeah,
everyone else is aliens and Hawkmen and shit.
It might be him.
And then
this guy's
villain's just Chinese. It's
so
racist.
So bad, dude.
The Red Scare would have predated, which is why
yeah.
I think like
the height of the Red Scare.
Just like, I'll
got it. Yeah.
That was probably formative.
I'll have him fight a white man.
So I learned about Fu Manchu in a class in college. It might have been that one I took where we watched like The Matrix and some other cool shit. But or maybe it was one of my Asian studies once. Because it was like basically it was talking about how Fu Manchu was like very distilled Orientalism like to a very easy visual format by being like, this is it. This is what Orientalism is. If you want a very good example, it's Fu Manchu, and like that's where I learned about that. But it sounds like very much like the visual trope of it all. Mm-hmm. Like sounds very much the same to me, or carried on in other characters. Like because I think it's just a very like common character for this kind of story, right? Like there's always some kind of object of power or some scroll or something.
Yeah. I mean, especially
MacGuffin.
Back in the day, in like, I don't know how like that period of time for China was, but like, I'm assuming like everyone, like, they didn't give a fuck. It was just I'll steal your idea. I'll make it a better movie. How about that?
I'm pretty sure that aside from like the litigiousness of America, that's still just how a lot of the rest of the world operates. Like, oh, we'll do it too.
Especially with storytellers, you know, you hear a story, you go to the two towns over and tell it a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even I'm trying to like, well, like Jackie Chan's movies, right? Like Drunken Master is not like a new story, right?
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
one of my favorite Jackie Chan movies. Like, well,
absolutely one of the best.
There's Legend of the Drunken Master, and then there's the Drunken Master.
Yeah, different movies.
So there's two different ones, but my favorite is Legend of the Drunken Master yeah. that has that scene where they're under the train, and Jackie Chan has like a really long. It's just a bamboo pole. It's not even a proper, like, bow. Huh. And the other guy has, like, a sword. And there is, like, literally, like, 3.5 feet of space that they're in tall-wise. And it's, like, maybe 3 feet wide because they're literally under the train.
Yeah.
And it's so impressively acrobatic that it was one of the things that I was like, oh, these movies are good, though. like there's a lot of gold in here in between all the funny bad shit.
And yeah.
Like that scene in particular made me fall in love with Jackie Chan movies. I think the first time I saw it was in college because Netflix back in the day had all those good like kung fu movies. They just had like I think that's like where we even found Shaw Brothers stuff the first time was on Netflix maybe.
And that's when we started buying the DVD collections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because not just those ones, because there was like that other collection we have that we don't even know who made those ones.
No,
it's just a mystery.
So another thing where we would get kung fu movies is, speaking of Walmart, they would just have like DVD bins of like $5 DVD in a pile, and
for $1.
Yeah, and one day Nick and I were you know at Walmart with our mom, and we were at the pile. And there was one called Duel of the Tough, and it was $1. And Nick was like, we're getting this.
Yeah.
So we got it, and I don't know where the DVD went or whatever happened to it, and we've never been able to find, like...
It went back from whence it came.
Because it didn't have any, like, production on it.
No.
It wasn't made by anyone, apparently, and there wasn't any intro credits. So literally
the information available to you is Duel of the Tough.
Yeah, it is the most bootleg brand movie I've ever seen. And the only scene I remember that's vividly is at one point he's fighting other martial artists and they have like a Chinese broadswords. And I think either he has bracers, he has mannequins, or he doesn't have anything on his wrists at all.
But he's
parrying them and it's making the silliest fucking noise.
Nice.
And I remember just being enthralled, being like, this is cinema.
That one was like mall kiosk quality slash like I don't know if you remember those kiosks like way back like when people went to the mall.
Right across from James Workshop, remember?
Yeah, it was right by GW. Yep. And like they were like it was unclear whether he burned them. Or like, you know, or like he actually got these from somewhere, but like it was clear that these were not mass production.
Yeah.
Legally dubious is the correct.
Legally dubious DVDs in front of the Games Workshop.
Because this wasn't like a guy like in the parking lot who was like, "Hey man, you want DVDs?" Because that didn't really happen around here.
No,
you had to go to like the city to find stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you'd occasionally get the guy being like, here's my mixtape, man, at the mall, but, like, that was rare.
So, because you brought up Drunken Master, because that's one of the ones I remember so well from, like, when I was a kid.
The Drunken Master or Legend?
I think that's the one where they have the end fight in the foundry, right?
The way I remember the Drunken Master is the one where they have the scenes in the school, like, the classroom. And they're, like, all in a line, and Jackie Chan's, like, fucking with the guy next to him a bunch.
I mean, the end fight where he goes through the dude, like, guy with the chain, and, mm-hmm. like, he beats him with, like, the fan or whatever.
It's been a while since I've watched
whichever that. Whichever one that is. But I love it so much because, like, that... The end fight scene, particularly that one, is, like, legendary for just being good. Mm. But I like it so much because it's, like, that the details he's able to, like, put in there were just so nice. Like... Especially the last fight, because the entire movie, it's all about how, like, the Drunken Master style is, like, super effective, but it's, like, but you're damaging yourself at the same time. Right. So it's just, like, you have to find a balance. And that was Jackie Chan's
problem.
Don't
fall into alcoholism just for kung fu.
And that's his problem, is he gets too drunk, and then he, like, eventually you can't fight, or you pass out, or...
Yeah.
And so at the end of the movie, as he's going through, when he's fighting the last dude... who's just a guy in a business suit who's whooping his ass.
Sobriety fist.
Yeah. Like, and he's getting fucked up and he's just like, I don't know what to do. Like, and then they have this like vague substance that they use to like flare the fires, and it's presumably just like pure ethanol or something.
Yeah.
So he's just like, he just starts drinking it. And then he starts to like almost like fall down, and then he hits himself and throws up, and he's just like, just right, and he found the balance. And then from there he like basically charges the dude, and then the guy's still hitting him a fuck ton and he doesn't care.
Right.
He's just like, I found the right amount.
I'm pretty sure this is the Drunken Master. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And then like the dude is just like starts to like get scared, and then Jackie to like show him, he's just like, you can do anything to me. He starts going around, he starts smashing all the boxes and shit. And he's just like, I don't feel anything right now. And then just charges him again. And this guy can't do anything about it. And he just whoops his ass completely. And then like, I love the end fight where he flips him like over his shoulders and he lands like and slams into like a box or something. And then he falls and passes out. It's beautiful. God, it's such a good, everything about that fight from like, the themes of the movie to like the choreography, perfect.
Beautiful. Yeah. I really love also that like at the end of the day it's like, oh no, he is too drunk to fail.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great theme.
it's so I kept he like he charges him, but specifically it's arms down and he just leans has his into chest him. Out, and yeah, and he just to the wall, and the guy just was like, fuck, like I can't do anything.
He's coming at
it. Yeah, it's so good.
So, two things. I think Legend is the one where they have the box that's in the orange wrap, and it's like a sacred root that's like, they need, because somebody's sick. And then that's, the plot of the movie revolves around that, he switches because Jackie Chan accidentally switches
it with something else, yeah.
And that's really valuable that the guys want back, so they chase him through the whole movie, and he's like, I don't want no trouble, I just want the thing to heal the person.
A classic premise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so classic that we also see it in the obvious cinematic masterpiece, Dragon Missile.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I've been waiting to bring this up, so a different genre or class of kung fu movies are ones that showcase weapons or objects.
Yeah.
And some that are our favorites are Dragon Missile, the Flying Guillotine.
Yes.
And one of my personal favorites, Legend of the Black Scorpion.
Yeah. Those are all good ones. And then there's another one too that we can't remember the name of right now, but it's it's like Dragon Missile, and the premise was like,
It's the something arrow.
Yeah, it's something arrow.
And that's not... no one uses any kind of arrowed weapons in the film.
No. Yeah, that was the other part about that one.
Does not feature a golden sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of contradictory titles in that way. But these ones specifically do. Like, Flying Guillotine, you know, if you're not familiar with the plot, the Emperor needs someone assassinated discreetly.
Yeah, remember that part.
So that's the most important part. He can't stress enough how discreetly these killings need to be.
It can't be obvious. It needs to be subtle.
It needs to be plausibly deniable that the Emperor sent someone to kill this person.
So he, you know, does the obvious thing. He contracts a man, one of the finest engineers in all of China, to make a weapon. A weapon that can do all of this. How would you describe the weapon?
It looks like a crab trap.
Yeah.
It really does.
Like an old crab trap.
So it's basically...
Before you see it, like, expand, it kind of just looks like the lid of a pot or something.
On a chain.
Yeah.
Like a basket lid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got kind of like a metal rim to it, and when he first throws it, if he hits something with it, I mean, it makes the sound of a gunshot.
Well, as it's flying, it makes the sound of like I don't know.
It makes magic noises.
Oh yeah, isn't it basically like the Xena chakram?
Yeah,
the screech sound.
Yeah, yeah, it's like
yeah.
Like,
and that's not just for our benefit. People notice.
Yeah.
They're like, what was that?
Yeah, it's not very discreet when they throw it. It's, in fact, very loud and obvious.
And this is nearly a weapon of mass destruction for ancient China.
And what happens is they throw it, and what they're really trying to do is sort of lasso it on top of your head. At which point, a like beekeeper's mask style basket will drop.
Yeah.
And then you're in there.
And you struggle hard. You can't get it off for some reason. It's too hard.
And then they pull back on the cord, and it cuts your head off in the basket that flies back to you.
And then they rip the cord, bringing your head and the weapon with it.
And now they've been decapitated discreetly.
Yes.
Discreetly.
From up to 30 feet away. And the Emperor...
You could be on the roof of perhaps the gate. I don't know.
It might be completely unrelated, but that what you just said, Tony, was just like, and you can't get it off for some reason. Like, that might be like the basis for... Or it's because it's Kung Pao into the fist, like maybe not, and it's just totally random. But when it's just like, we'll use it. Tiny net, and they get him with a net that doesn't even fit. You know,
yeah.
That might be a reference. Yeah.
Maybe that's that could
that could be
because they struggle so hard to get this net off, and it would not be hard to get off.
No,
and when you throw and other than getting actually catching you, when you throw it, this thing can like break walls and cut through trees and stuff like. Yeah. It is nearly like
some sort of wizard level. Like enchanted it at some point in like the process to make all of it function, and then the Emperor is so excited about like this new method of killing, but the engineer's like, well, it takes like months to learn how to do it. That's why it took me like a year to develop it and everything, because like you need like a special set of skills. And the Emperor's like, I've got it. I'm going to get like 10 of our best dudes, right? Like some of our most formidable young men, the famous ones. We're going to get all of them, and we're going to make them part of Secret Squadron, and Secret Squadron's just going to train with these. And they bring Secret Squadron in, and there are two guys who are just as good as each other at the flying guillotine. But one of them gets no fucking applause.
No recognition at all.
No.
The guy will go first, and then he'll do it, and everyone's like, you're the best, you're the greatest there's ever been! And then the other guy will do the same move, and everyone's like, it's not that big a deal, guy.
He did. I mean, we've all been training, you know.
No one else could do it. Only these two. The only thing that determines that one of them is like the favorite is they picked. They picked one guy to be their favorite. So the other guy's really pissed off, and
now he's spent a long time training on the flying guillotine.
Yeah, and
naturally, this leads to bickering, which leads to kung fu fighting.
Always. And this, unfortunately, also the effectiveness of the weapon and the deadliness of Secret Squadron alerts the Emperor to a real problem. These guys could potentially discreetly and silently kill him.
Dun, dun, dun!
Keep in mind, all of them are of the opinion of the Emperor is paying us so much fucking money.
This is great. We're so happy. This is a great job.
We love this.
Wow. Isn't job security great, guys?
We also have not yet assassinated the guy that the Emperor wants us to discreetly assassinate.
Yeah, they take their time on that shit. They kill like three other people before they get to that guy.
Yeah.
That we don't get real reasons for why they need to be.
Yeah, it's almost, they just kind of like, this guy just... Get him real quick.
They don't really set that much up. It's just like, well, the Emperor said to kill him, so
I don't know. Get his ass.
What are we discussing?
Like, he has like a perfectly loyal super murder squad, and he basically takes the half that he thinks are more loyal to him / more evil, I guess. Because like he picks the one that's pissed off because everyone's like, the other guy's the favorite. He's like, I can tell you're bitter. How would you like to kill him?
Yeah. He really does, dude. He basically does.
So he sets half of them against the other half.
Naturally, you know, because this is very productive to his end goal.
Yeah. And I don't even know if they get the guy they were originally supposed to get. I think that's part of...
He goes into hiding, right?
Yeah.
He gets like a wife and shit. Yeah, it's like a whole thing. Yeah.
People are out here throwing around these screaming baskets. You know?
And then you remember the Emperor's new famous secret squadron? I think those guys are throwing those death baskets.
Now, was it in the first movie or the second movie where they figure out the defense of the flying...
Oh, yeah, it's the first one. Because then in the second one, the solution is the same thing twice. Yeah. because the second weapon is the same thing twice.
So, yeah, flying guillotine, it's a basket that drops on your head. So, obviously, at some point, our heroes need to be able to stop from getting their heads cut off by a magic basket.
Because the Emperor is not the main character.
No.
We are not cheering for the guy to get killed. At least, we're not supposed to be.
And he figures out if you just, like, stick an umbrella in there, it won't be able to drop totally onto your head. It'll just cut up part of the umbrella.
Specifically, it's like a handmade metal umbrella with no, like... No cover. It's like a boneless. Yeah. It's only bone.
Yeah,
an only bone umbrella.
Yeah, and clog up the guillotine.
And yeah, that you can expand, right? So like it can't just hit you. You can catch it if you lower it like low enough.
Smart stuff. So the next Flying Guillotine movie comes out, and they're still like one team against the other trying to kill each other.
But the first teams do resolve their conflict. One does win.
Yeah. But like it once again becomes Flying Guillotine
versus Flying Guillotine Squad, because of course this is like Arms Proliferation 101, right? Like I get an ICBM, they get an ICBM.
Well, now I need two. Yeah. Now they need two.
So now it's two teams walking around with a basket on a chain and a steel umbrella. And they're
just trying to get each other.
Just trying to get each other until one of them's like, you know what? I think that we can make a better Flying Guillotine.
Because they got us right now. Like,
yeah.
We can't get them like we want to.
So what happens with the new Flying Guillotine, right? It's unbelievable. So first it gets onto something. Maybe it's your umbrella, maybe it's your head, and then the first basket drops down. And then if you stop it, another basket.
Yeah.
Another basket, even further down, and then it gets you. And I'm not sure it works in the film. I don't remember seeing the second one.
It has to by necessity in order to bring about the double, like, umbrella defense.
Yeah, otherwise there wouldn't be the need for
it. It happens, like, once in the beginning, but I think, like, the whole, visually, the way it works, it's not that great. So they were like, we can't, we just have to move on from this. Yeah.
So while the Flying Guillotine is obviously what you use when you need subtle executions done, but when you don't need subtlety, when you need an exterminator, you send the Dragon Missile.
Missile is the strongest weapon ever devised.
Dragon Missile does something that a lot of kung fu movies do, where they have a person who, once you see the film, you're like, that is objectively the villain.
Yeah.
And then for the first...
But he's the main character.
But he's also the main character, and also you don't want him to win.
No. What do they mean by this?
When he finally gets his, you're like, oh, yes!
Yeah, you know, like, you're cheering at the top
of that is literally when the credits hit.
He's just going around dragon missing everyone to solve all of his problems, and it just keeps working. Like,
but it's great, too, because Kevin constantly made the comparison of that, like, he brandishes it as if it's a gun.
Yeah.
Like, he's like,
it's very much...
See this? He's like, I'll use it.
It's the implied threat of a gun, very much so. Like,
and it's... might be more deadly than a gun.
Yeah.
You can't stop it, seemingly. So,
to describe the dragon missile, they are essentially boomerangs.
Yeah, he's two, by the way.
Yeah.
And he has two, but they're metal and oversized, and he wields them kind of like dual swords on his back.
Yeah. Sort of like kukris, like
yeah, and he like we're saying to basically like he actually will hand to hand combat you for about 2 minutes,
yeah,
and if you show any kind of resistance, he's immediately like, well, I have a gun,
and then that's it. It goes exactly the same way as if an actual kung fu man was ready to rumble with anybody, but if they like they block twice in a row, he's like, well, gun then.
Yeah.
And it works. He gets them. Wouldn't that guy just get you? That's John Wick.
He just hucks his blade boomerang at you, and it goes flying, and you can't do shit about
it. It might as well be a lightsaber.
And it cuts your head off.
It's like the Indiana Jones scene of just like, well, gun. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
it just keeps happening.
And also sent by the Emperor, right?
To get this
the life root, right?
To get the life root.
Yeah. And
so similar to the like Jackie Chan legend plot.
Doesn't he send like a squad first?
It's him and another guy.
Yeah, it's like the dragon.
Or no, he does send a squad and they fail, and then he's like, all right,
he's the ringer. He's like
He's who you call in. They don't want he doesn't want to give it to the emperor or something.
They don't. If we give it to him, he'll heal.
He'll heal, but more importantly, it'll be Dragon Missile Man who heals him, not me.
That's what it was.
So we want to go get it instead of Dragon Missile Man.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So he fucks them up because he's like, well, you guys don't have a gun.
He shows up. And this is like a squad of five, and it's like, you know, the classic, it's like, or like six or something of the baddest dudes. Like,
and they're bad dudes.
They're
pretty bad dudes.
They fuck shit up. But then like Dragon Missile Man shows up.
And it's not even a contest.
He's like, oh, you guys are betraying the Emperor? Well,
did you know?
Well.
I'm done. And then like he just takes out the dragons.
Yeah.
He pretty much like, shame. You know?
And then like he starts cleaning house and then like they run away. And then he thinks one of them might have the root. There's a chance that the root was destroyed. In truth, the root went away with the actual hero. He went off. He fucked off to his own way.
They burn it, and everybody's like, "Oh no!" But that's like what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. And the main character has the root, and then he's like, "Well, there's a chance that one of those rat bastards still has it. I guess I'll hunt them all down like animals."
Yeah.
And every single time he catches one of them, they're like, "We don't have it. We just were running away because you were going to kill us." And he's like, "You're damn right I was going to kill you."
Well, that's too bad for you.
Yeah, because he goes to get it from this one person's house, and then the other guys show up first, and they're being shitty about it, so that the people at the house are like, "Oh, we gotta get out of here." And then the Dragon Monster comes and kills Teal being shitty about it, and then thinks he has to kill the other people too. Yeah, that's what happened.
It's because
it's a big mix-up story.
Well, because the guy Kevin was talking about who has the root, he like shimmies up into the trees or something.
Yes,
And then that house that they find is like his blind mother is there or something.
Yeah, and he kills the mom.
But he's doing the like, "She'll never see me." And
God, I forgot about that. An extended sequence.
She's just stumbling around. Someone there?
An extended, almost sitcom-like sequence.
It's plastic,
Him looking around the house for the root while a blind woman is like, is someone that, like Mr. Magooing exactly behind him?
Yeah, like swings around, he ducks, you know.
He's watching her like he's fucking Buffalo Bill. Like stalking fucking what's her face in his house.
Yeah,
I think she eventually does like is like oh and he's
oh
like,
she knew he was there the whole time.
And then he's like, "Oh, you got me."
And I'm gonna bring this up. So this is one of those things where I had an epiphany watching this fucking movie about like stereotypes and tropes and shit. And I feel like this movie is a textbook example of the stereotype that all Chinese people just know kung fu. Because the old blind grandma, the second she knows he's in there, she starts swinging and she's nice.
Yeah.
She is no fucking slouch. She is beating his ass. And he's like, "Whoa, what is going on?" And I just fucking lost it because I was like, "Yeah, of course the blind lady knows kung fu."
No.
Like, why not?
Another fucking thing. I'm sorry, Dragon Missile just got me. So a key part of Dragon Missile is that the Dragon Missile Man is one of two disciples of like the most deadly man in all of China.
Oh, yeah.
And
the most deadly man in all of China
had two techniques.
I was going to bring this up.
Two techniques are the Dragon Missile, which as we have seen, fucks tremendously.
It's also important to note, similarly to the Flying Guillotine, when the Dragon Missile hits things, it can, like, explode walls. Not just chop branches down, but, like, entire trees.
Yeah.
It's unstoppable.
It's a lightsaber that returns to him every time.
Impossible. It doesn't have to have a boomerang arc. It's, like, it's just magically going back to him.
It's more like a video game, like, kind of
effect. He's in a video game. Yeah.
But the other technique, which, by the way, immediately, I thought I could see like the wind scar of how this movie was going to go, and I was so excited for it because the other technique is the iron fingers.
Yes,
and it gets brought up that's the other technique because when the like group of bad guys leave with the stolen root, he rips the saddlebag off one of their horses, and he's able to rip it off the saddle. Like he rips the leather and everything off. He's able to do it quickly and silently because he was the one that trained in the iron fingers.
So logically,
then the Dragon Missile, which flies through the air at you, can be caught by the Iron Fingers. Get that out of your head. The Iron Fingers don't come up again.
Not even once.
Nope.
They never mention it ever again.
He gets the saddlebag and that's it.
It's kind of just there to be like, how do you get up from the trees? Iron Fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He climbs.
How did he snatch the bag?
Iron Fingers. That's about it.
Because the actual way the dragon missiles are defeated is via net or wire net.
Yeah. Making a net out of...
After they observe fishermen throwing a fishing net, and they have like a, like not even montage moment.
Nets. I love that part of the movie, because once they net the dragon missiles, all of his confidence...
His face immediately is like, oh no!
Yeah.
My God!
And you're cheering at the top of your lungs. Because he's just been smiting people unstoppable this whole fucking movie. And you're like, what is he going to get, dude? Like, what is he going to get? What's coming to him? And they put that shit in the net, and you're like, yeah!
He yells like, you can't do that. Give that back.
Yeah, you think, like, maybe he catches it with his iron finger. One of the main guy catches one with his iron fingers. They duel it out, right?
Yeah.
You would hope.
That would be a perfect, like, you know, epiphany, you know, kind of climax. But no. They observe these fishermen, they go, nets, that's it, got it. Even though we saw the dragon missile cut nets down earlier in the movie.
Really specifically, it went out, like they showed it exactly why it wouldn't work. It's still made out of magic lightsaber.
Right.
So it just cuts through the nets, and then they're like, but what if we throw
But if nets? We what if we make the nets? And they weave them using, I don't know, I guess metal or something.
Iron fingers, fuck it.
Yeah, you know? And then that's... And not only as soon as they catch it, he knows he's done.
Yeah.
But he like, kind of goes, yeah, like, oh, give me those back. Let's see, I don't know, maybe if they'll fall for it.
Yeah.
And then he turns and starts running.
He books it.
And they immediately throw them at his back.
Oh, yeah. A key point in this, by the way, they make a big deal about the reason that he's able to kill people at all with the dragon missile is that he is the master of the dragon missile.
Right.
And then when they get the blades and, like, there's a female main character and she has one, and he literally is like, you've never trained with the dragon missile. You'll just hurt yourself. Give it back. And then as soon as she's going to throw it at him, he starts to run. And no, you did not need to train. That's the secret of the dragon missile.
Like, he was basically like, you're going to shoot yourself in the thigh with that. And
yeah.
trying to get her to give it up.
Yeah.
And then it hits him. They both hit him in the back and end of movie credits roll. That is the end.
That is another great thing about Kung Fu movies. It's just like, when are the credits going to roll? We'll find
right
out.
Now.
We'll find so out. Because it can happen at any moment.
My favorite dragon missile scene, though, is after the whole slapstick bit with the grandma. He's like, all right, fine, you got me. And he gets on his horse.
Yeah.
And he starts fully riding away. And right as they relax and go,
yeah, because she's
right,
like,
he's leaving.
Oh, good, my kung fu did scare him off.
Yeah. Right as he's leaving, he's like, he takes 1 second and looks back. And then throws the dragon missile.
Oh, it's so good.
What did you think he was gonna do?
And immediately
he's the dragon missile. He gets her ass.
Yes. It's so good.
He cuts right through her dumb old walking stick, and she's like,
and then, he's immediately dead. And then that's when the guy comes back to his dead grandma, and he's like, "Whoa, what the fuck happened here?" You know. So that's probably my favorite scene in that, just because the delivery of him, like, stopping on the horse, turning around with this, like, kind of smirk.
Yeah.
Like, he, like, can't help himself.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I could just leave. Like, that was always an option.
Yeah. By the way, yeah, so he's there to get the root because explicitly this woman was like, anything to save the Emperor, even the life root that I spent my whole life cultivating. And, like, the Emperor is like, and by the way, make sure you don't let that bitch live, because she can grow another life
root. Yeah, in case somebody else needs a life
root. And one of the toadies is like, but Lord,
what if you need another?
We don't know who poisoned you. The start of this movie is you got poisoned, and we don't know who.
They could do it again.
They could do it again, and then we're out of life roots. And he's like, no, China will do without.
And with that, we're going to end tonight's episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the nature of this content, go and give me a like and subscribe on YouTube. You can go and give me a follow on Blue Sky. And you can support us on our Patreon. I'd like to give a special thanks to our aspiring Magus, Uncle Matty, and a super thanks to our fellow scryers, Midnight Grimoire, Gary Gablino, The Greater Good Boy, and my mom. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Peace.